Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca, Mesut Ozil, disparo de Bellerín, gol del Arsenal, marca Bellerín, 5-0.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
You're unwell.
I'm unwell. I'm mending swiftly, but I've spent most of the weekend in bed. I mean, it's often the case anyway. I'm a spectacularly lazy individual, and international breaks are an excuse for that sort of behaviour, but unfortunately I have been struck down with some sort of virus.
So I'm beginning to get a little bit worried that this podcast could literally be the death of you, you know.
Well, who knows? I mean, yeah, exactly. There must be, I suppose, you know, lots of good news for Arsenal players. You know, Wales qualified, Giroud back among the goals, so they've got me to thank, I suppose.
Could we just get a pledge here that if it does actually happen, that I could have all your stuff and use it as prizes on the podcast going forward?
Of course. I mean, I have almost nothing of value.
Right.
I'm just looking around my desk now. No, there's some deodorant.
Right.
A box that a watch came in. I've subsequently lost the watch. and a ukulele, actually. A vintage ukulele. So
you have a vintage ukulele. Any particular reason? Is this your George Formby tribute act in the Genesis stage?
Yeah, it's very much in the Genesis stage. I don't know how to play it, but somebody bought it for me, and I've sort of kept it ever since. So, form an orderly queue, guys. When that day comes, there's a hell of a will and testament to be made out.
Pretty awesome. I just want to sort of say at this point of the podcast that I've been reinstalling all the stuff from my hard drive and all that kind of crack. It's still going on, my hard drive madness, but I've installed GarageBand again. And listen, I don't know if you can hear this, but like... Can you hear that?
No, I can't hear that.
Oh, I wonder, can anyone else? Okay, I'm going to play it again. One sec. Does that work? You can't hear anything?
I did hear that. I had to turn you right up.
Okay, that's pretty awesome. So if the podcast gets, you know, if it all goes a bit wrong or gets a bit dull, I'm just going to start... You know, that
just
kind of stuff.
Knocking stuff out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I mean, you know, that could well happen because we are... firmly entrenched in the interlull.
We certainly are. And what an interlull it's been for various teams. Wales, Aaron Ramsey is going to the European Championships 2016, and I think this is Wales' first visit to an international tournament since the World Cup in 1958.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fantastic there. It is quite extraordinary, and I'm really pleased for him because, you know, had he been born into a different generation, he probably would never have had this opportunity. But he's been a key part of them getting there. And he didn't always have the easiest time with Wales. He was stripped of the captaincy, wasn't he? He was made captain and then they gave it to Ashley Williams, of all people. But he's been a massive member of that team and it must be a huge sense of achievement for him.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's great for him as a player as well, because I think when you are a player, and as much as we might look at international football slightly differently, they look at it as, you know, this is the top of the game. To go to a major international tournament is a big, big thing.
Of course, massive. I mean, like I say, look at Ryan Giggs, you know, never played for Wales at that kind of level, so... Yeah, massive thing for Ramsey.
But he hardly ever played for Wales anyway, did he? Because he was always in.
Well, that's true. That's probably partly why they didn't get there. Never turned up. I mean, obviously, you know, from an Arsenal point of view, it's always mixed feelings, isn't it? You want players, you kind of like it when guys don't go off to international tournaments, get some rest, have a proper full pre-season, especially when they're important players like Ramsey. However, it does make watching the tournaments that much more fun, seeing the Arsenal players involved, and you want them to be happy and you want them to do well.
I think there's a benefit to them as a footballer as well, you know, to play on a stage like that. It kind of, I guess it increases confidence and belief, and do it on those big stages is a big thing for players. So that's good. Ireland didn't qualify. They were beaten by a fucking magic header by Lewandowski.
I mean, he's on fire, isn't he? I mean, he's more than on fire. He's sort of disintegrated into ash. He's so hot right now. And it's funny, I mean, in the summer, there were a couple of stories linking us with him, which seem completely fanciful now. Just like an absolute pipe dream stuff.
Yeah, but why would you? I mean, why would a club like Bayern Munich let him go? That's the thing.
I know.
And he's still quite young, isn't he? He's only 25, 26, I think. Is that right?
Something like that. I don't know.
I should look that up.
Have a little Google. But he, he's got something ridiculous, like about 50 goals in 5 games, something like that. The whole Ireland, but Ireland beat Germany, let's not forget.
Yeah, amazing.
That was, did you watch that?
I didn't. It was, whatever night it was on, Thursday night, I was working and couldn't really pay any attention to anything. So I was following it a little bit on Twitter. And obviously, folk were very, very excited indeed. Shane Long's goal. And a suggestion that perhaps there was a touch of Arsenal to Germany in the sense that they kind of turned up and thought, well, we beat them 6-1 last time. We'll just do something similar again. But they didn't quite do that. So fantastic win. And obviously, the chance for Ireland to go through to the finals was there last night. But look, I think if you'd asked people the beginning of the year or the beginning of the tournament when the groups were drawn, if they take a playoff place, I think that would have been pretty acceptable, all things considered. So just depends who they get.
It's all about the draw now. Yeah, yeah. That's it.
Mm. Mesut Ozil got assists or some...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lovely little pass, actually, against... Who was it against? I want Georgia. To say Georgia.
Georgia. Yeah.
He played pretty well across the two games, I thought. Not too bad. And then Giroud's the one that I think is probably most interesting, isn't it? Because he has been having a torrid time would be a bit of an exaggeration, but, you know, those quotes from him in the last 24 hours certainly played up the drama of his situation, which shouldn't be a surprise considering Giroud, but a couple of goals for him for France, and hopefully that will help his confidence. He owes quite a lot to Kasper Schmeichel, though, I would say.
Yeah, the first one was a bit of a howler, and the second one also a bit of a howler, you'd have to say.
Not great.
No.
First one just sort of goes through him, and the second one he just sort of palms it straight back to him.
Yeah.
But, you know, he'll take it, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I mean, I think he needs those goals. The comments were interesting, weren't they? Saying that this is the first time in his career that he's ever been in a situation like this, and that he's going to have to, what did he say? Harden myself mentally. Which is interesting, because that seems an admission that perhaps he hasn't been quite as strong mentally as he should have been in certain situations.
No, that's it. I think that, I think we've said that about him in the past, that he can be quite sensitive mentally and physically at times, which is not the most helpful. Mm. And I think that it's probably good for him, you know, if he's never experienced this in his career, being second choice or being out of favour, which I'm not even sure he is necessarily out of favour. It's just that Arsene's going with a different option at the present time. Mm. I think it's probably an important part of his development to face up to this and see if he can come through it stronger. You'd have to hope he will. And to be fair to him, when he has been called upon to start or as a substitute, he's generally been okay. You know, he's knocked in a few goals. He's come on and scored a couple of times. So I think he's kind of doing what he can. And this role as a plan B is what people have talked about being an ideal situation for a while.
Mm. I mean, I'm not sure we can talk about...
He won't
feel
that way.
No, of course. But I'm not even sure we can talk about it being important for his development. You know, he's 29 years of age now, so I'm not sure development is the right word, but it might be good for his character in the sense that he has been, since he arrived at Arsenal, essentially the number one striker at the club for various reasons. One, because we didn't have anybody else. Two, because other options didn't work out. Three, because every other comp was injured. So he's kind of had that position, and I won't say by default, because he's basically a 20-goal-a-season forward, which is all right. You know, that's more than acceptable, really. But now he's got a real challenge, and I think it's going to be very interesting to see how he responds to that challenge, because we've talked about their character and their various mental strengths, if you like, in the sense that, Giroud seems to... He seems to live everything, doesn't he? Like, everything that happens to him is the worst thing ever. You know, a missed chance, a kick in the leg. He's like, ah, ah, ah. And Walcott's like... Actually, maybe I could... Hang on. Walcott's more like... Little noises going off in his head, you see?
He's almost exactly like that. Yeah.
So that's Theo Walcott, whereas... Giroud, I should have picked some really nasty-sounding synth. But, you know, he does have to get his head around the situation that he's in, and the only way to respond is to work hard and perhaps add something to his game that will make the manager sit up and think about him in a different way, because he knows exactly what he gets from Giroud after 3 years as the number one striker. He knows every single thing about his game, and it's up to him maybe to provide something different, whether that's a bit more aggression or a bit more, I don't know what. I think aggression is probably the thing that would be easiest for him to add to his game, no?
Yeah, yeah. Basically, what he needs to do, how he needs to respond to this, is he needs to not roll around on the floor wagging his fingers, but get straight back up,
yeah.
effectively. And that would be great to see. I mean... I have to be honest, I'm not sure what we've seen of Giroud so far over these 3 years. I don't know if he's got it in his locker to come back from this. I'm not sure how hard it's going to hit him being second choice for a period of time. It wouldn't amaze me if he really struggled with that, but I'd be pleasantly surprised if he was able to fight back, as it were, and reassert himself, because, you know, even though Walcott's doing well at the moment, I still think it's not necessarily a question of him being first choice in every fixture. I think there will be games where Arsene does Giroud. I think there'll be quite a few of those. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out over the next couple of months or so.
Yeah. Theo Walcott got a goal for England the other night.
He did, playing from the right-hand side as well. Harry Kane took up the central striking berth from Wayne Rooney. and Walcott played about as well as Rooney's been playing recently, actually, Harry Kane. He was not great. But Walcott did well, was probably England's most dangerous player, and scored a very, very good goal. Confident take. He's obviously, you know, flying high at the moment.
Yeah, he's feeling good. Alexis Sanchez scored against Brazil, and then the Chilean coach said, yeah, he's hurt. You know, he's got a groin strain, but, you know, we played him anyway. That's good.
It's mildly terrifying, that, isn't it?
It is, because, you know, we, not that we rely on him, but he is that guy who gives us that bit extra. You know, he's the guy who can score those kind of goals against Manchester United in a big game, and it's hard to see somebody else doing that or picking up those reins, if that were the case.
Yeah. I think he's arguably our most difficult player to replace if he were to be out for any length of time. I mean, obviously, you'd love Chile to give him a rest, but he's probably more important to them than he is even to us. So I suppose we have to accept it. But it doesn't seem to affect him too badly. He scored a good goal.
Mm.
They beat Brazil. I mean, hopefully he can sort of just, I don't know, have a rest on the plane. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, the club should be basically sending people out there to massage his groin in pretty much every waking moment when he's not playing football. Just, you know, massage.
Well, I don't think they'll be short of volunteers. he's a popular man.
He does seem to be all right, yes. So who else? Anybody else that we're missing?
I'll tell you who played. Alex Iwobi played for Nigeria.
How did he get on?
He made a couple of substitute appearances, but I think he got himself a couple of senior caps against Congo and Cameroon.
That's interesting,
so
isn't it?
That's quite impressive.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if maybe he's eligible for more than one country. Maybe he's eligible for England as well. Nigeria felt they had to get in there early.
Mm.
He's the nephew of JJ Okocha, isn't he, Alex Iwobi? I think I'm right in saying.
Is he indeed? But, there's some good lineage there.
Yeah, exactly. So I think Nigeria was always going to be the way he was going to go. But, yeah, I mean, interesting to see. He's one of the few young players who hasn't been sent out on loan. You know, he's been kept around the squad. I think we turned down a few loan inquiries for him in the summer.
Mm.
But he hasn't really had a look in as yet. I suppose long may it continue, really, because that means the injuries haven't been too bad.
Yeah, and he has just signed a new deal, actually. He signed a new deal last week to keep him at the club. And he looked impressive in the Emirates Cup. Had a couple of good games there, yes. I think. And obviously you can't read too much into pre-season tournaments and what have you, but I do wonder if there's a reason why he's been kept around. Perhaps they don't view him as quite ready for a loan move, but also if, for example, something were to happen to one or a number of our strikers, then at least we have something in reserve.
Yeah, I think he's made the bench a couple of times. And, you know, we've got the fixture at Sheffield Wednesday coming up in the Capital One Cup. He might be involved in the matchday squad for that one. So perhaps we'll see him, and maybe the situation will be reassessed in January.
Mm.
Oh, Santi Cazorla, he played for Spain and scored.
Scored twice?
Yeah.
Scored twice.
Of all things.
That's good. I mean, Santi's been
he's been goal shy of late.
Mm. I think we got mixed up a bit there.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay. Sorry, that just breaks things up now. We can go back and do that. No, yeah, no, he scored twice. Apart from penalties, he hasn't been, you know, scoring as much as we might like.
No, you can certainly say that. It's one of those great mysteries, isn't it? How a player so technically accomplished can fluff his lines so frequently in front of goal. But he seems to have managed it for Spain. I imagine he plays in a more advanced role for them, which I imagine, you know, influences things and probably gives him a few more goal-scoring opportunities. But good to see him back among the goals. I mean, we haven't had a penalty this season, have we?
No, I don't think so. No.
Mm. Interesting there.
Yeah.
Overdue.
Should we have had any? I can't remember. Can't remember if we should have had any or not, but
no, there's none that stand out to you. I mean, we're probably forgetting some really obvious ones in massive games, but no. Well, it's strange. I don't know if he's scored at all, has he, Santi Cazorla?
Not this season, no. No. No goals.
It'll come. I'm sure it'll come. It'd be good. It'd be good to see a few more goals from him. And also Ramsey. You know, it'd be great. I mean, Ramsey missed that chance against United, which you really would have expected him to take, that side-footed volley. I think the sooner he can get back on the goal trail, the better, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's the interlull for our players. Of course, there was...
Yeah, pretty much.
There was sad news from Merseyside last week.
Oh, well, about Brendan, you mean?
Yeah. Sad news.
Very sad. Very sad.
Was that before or after the live Arscast Extra?
I think it was on the day, wasn't it?
Right. So we're going over old ground
I think
here.
It was on the day.
This is old.
I mean,
ground.
Guys, it's old ground, but what's new ground, I suppose, is the appointment.
Jürgen yes.
Klopp. How do you feel about that?
Sort of like that, you know?
Right. Okay.
I don't really... I mean, look, he to me seemed one of the very obvious candidates to replace Arsene Wenger if the timing had been right. You know, the profile of Dortmund and Arsenal, not that they're entirely similar, but similar-ish, you know? Mm-hmm. And he had done great work there. But look, timing is a big thing in football. Arsene Wenger still got 18 months left on his contract. There's no chance in hell that the board would sack him just so they could bring in someone like Klopp.
No.
That was never going to happen. And he's ended up at Liverpool. I guess he's going to make the Premier League a more interesting place.
Oh, definitely. Certainly entertaining.
Hmm.
I think, I would have really... I mean, I'll be clear. I would have really liked to see him replace Arsene Wenger at some point. But as you say, timing's everything. And I'm not even sure, you know, Arsene's deal expires in 2017. I'm not even sure that'll be the end of his reign. It wouldn't, at this stage, my money would be on an extension of some kind.
Ooh,
so
really?
Yeah, I think so.
Right.
I think he'll be offered it, certainly.
Right.
Whether or not he takes it up.
Well, it all depends what happens, doesn't it? You know, football-wise.
Exactly, and I don't think no decision will be made probably until the back end of that season, that final season. But if I had to put money on it, I would say that I think he will stay on, yeah.
Right.
Do you not?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it really depends. I think he's got to win something, or he's got to... I think he's got to win the league, really, for me, to be perfectly honest. I would qualify that by saying it really depends who is out there as a replacement. Do you know what I mean?
This is it.
Because that you might well want a fresh start, but if there's nobody like a Klopp out there, or a Guardiola, or a manager of that stature that people want to see in the club, then I don't know. That will make the decision, from the club's point of view, a little more difficult. You know, we've seen managers come and go, and all of a sudden you think Michael Laudrup, for example, at Swansea. He's the next guy, and, well, look, he had a good season at Swansea, and now he's managing somewhere in, I don't know, he's in Qatar or something like that, wasn't he?
Qatar, possibly, I think.
You know? So it really depends on the availability of the right candidate to take over, I think. But, you know, in order for him to merit a new deal, I think we really need to win the title in one of those two seasons, or, you know, this season or next. Or at least progress in the Champions League to a large extent.
Yeah, well, that would be good to see. Mm. That's probably not going to be this year.
No, I don't think it is going to be this year. The other thing I was going to say about Klopp, though, regardless of how much we all might have liked him, do you get the feeling that he could be, like, entertaining? Yes, but also quite annoying?
Potentially. What, you mean to fans of other clubs?
Mm.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, that kind of relentless positivity can be quite frustrating after a while. And
Is that his thing? Relentless positivity?
I think so. I think so. That's my impression. That sort of enthusiasm.
Right.
And I think that can be grating after a while. I mean, the thing is, look, he's obviously a very charming guy, very erudite, very quite witty. But he's also a Liverpool manager.
Yeah, that's it. By their very nature, you know, we've got to categorise. We've got to stick them in a box. The box marked.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, pretty much a cunt.
That's it. Whether he likes it or not, he is now affiliated with the likes of, you know, Brendan Rodgers,
Kenny Dalglish,
Rafa Benitez, Kenny Dalglish. That's his lineage. That's his heritage that he's stepping into. So if he can survive that and not be a cunt, I'll be very impressed indeed.
Mm. Yeah, it's a tough gig.
It is a tough gig. Yeah. It's going to be tricky for him to remain likable.
What else has been happening? Not much. Not much else has been happening, has it, since we last spoke?
No. Has anything interesting happened, like, outside of Arsenal? I'm just trying to think. In the world, more generally?
Oh, well, there's the whole Sepp Blatter, Michel Platini suspended for 90 days thing. That was quite interesting.
FIFA. That is very exciting. I can't pretend to understand all the ins and outs.
Well, okay, let me try and break it down for you in very simple terms. Right.
Thank you. Layman's terms. Okay. Jens Layman's terms.
They are complete and utter cunts. And the weight of evidence is so much now that they've suspended them for 90 days.
I basically feel they need to burn the whole thing down.
Yes, they need to start a new football organisation, a new world body for football. Not called FIFA, not called UEFA. You have to think of a better name for it.
Yeah, change the name of the computer game.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it's sort of satisfying to see the baddies get their comeuppance, I suppose.
Mm, I agree. And, you know, they have been baddies. And, you know, we're having a World Cup in November in the future, and it's in the middle of the desert.
That'll be strange when that happens and everyone sort of... By then, hopefully, everyone will be fully aware of the machinations of how that came to pass, you know?
But aren't people already aware?
I mean, well, they are. But, I mean, it'll be fully disclosed and fully public. And I think everyone will be out there sort of with the sense of, sorry, why are we here?
This is shit.
Yeah. I mean, that'll be very odd, won't it? It won't be quite the sort of carnival atmosphere that one usually associates with a World Cup.
No, I mean, look, the world could be in a very different place, and all of a sudden, you know, there could be a game between Brazil and Argentina, and then strange things start happening in the stadium, and it's the ghosts of all the people that died building those stadiums.
God, that's quite a somber thought, but yeah. Well, look, I shan't be going to Qatar, I imagine.
No, neither will I. I definitely won't.
No?
No.
Well, let's call that a boycott, then.
Yes, the boycott starts here.
We've taken a stance.
Absolutely. Okay, we're going to take a break now, and we're going to do questions and all that kind of stuff right after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is the synth-powered Arscast Extra. And this is the part where we answer your questions sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog. Thank you indeed for sending your questions. Sorry we can't get to them all, but we'll do our best to get to as many as we can. So do you want to start or will I or what?
Well, why don't you start?
Why don't I start? Okay, I could think of about 8 reasons why, but I won't go there. And I'll just start. I think that would be good. This first one, right, comes from Travis Cavey. Travis Cavey. Mm. At Trav Cavey.
Like that name.
Yeah.
Trav for short, yeah.
Trav, yeah. Cavey. That would be his football nickname. Cavey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, he says...
Good goal, Cavey.
Yeah, nice one, Cavey. On my head, Cavey. He wants to know, should a club be able to stop a player playing for their country when they're carrying an injury?
That is an interesting question. I'm tempted to say yes. If they're carrying an injury, I think the rules are that they have to report to duty regardless, right?
Mm-hmm.
So even if a player's injured, they can be forcibly made to attend the squad get-together to be assessed by the country's medical staff. But if the medical staff... the problem is, where do you draw the line, I guess, isn't it? So in the case of someone like Alexis, like, it's a very minor strain, and he would play through it for Arsenal, so why should he not play through it for Chile?
Mm.
The reason being, of course, that it's Arsenal who have to pay his wages and live with that. So I think it's probably too complicated to actually put something like that in place, because also how do you really ascertain how injured a player is? You know, I mean, obviously there's medical testing, but a player might say they're fit in order to play and things like that. It's frustrating for fans of clubs, but I'm not necessarily sure that you can police it, so to speak. I mean, what's your opinion?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you have to take into account what the player wants as well, that he might want to play in a game where he's supposedly injured. And I think we overlook the fact that players are all kind of slightly injured all season anyway, because of the amount of football that they play. They're all carrying little aches and strains and knocks, which are managed and nursed through the week in terms of training, in terms of games. You know, players get injections in order to play. So, you know, there is an element of that. If a player is too badly injured to play, I think most international coaches would accept that, you know. Mm-hmm. But if a guy's borderline and you've got a game against Brazil, for example, which is going to help you qualify for a World Cup, I think this is where the frustration comes in, because the Chile manager goes, well, okay, maybe we've got a game against Peru on Tuesday. We could maybe get away without Alexis for a game against Peru, but not against Brazil. And if he does get a little bit injured in it, I wasn't going to play him against Peru, and we don't have any more internationals for another 4 or 6 weeks or whatever it might be. So there's no sort of stop mechanism there, you know what I mean, for the international managers. They can just say, okay, well, give it a try, and if it doesn't work out, well, he can go back to his club and get good medical treatment there.
Exactly.
So it's a tricky one. It's a grey area, and I think we, again, going back to what we were talking about at the start, that players like to play for their country. They do like to go away and represent their country, and particularly somebody like Alexis, who's got huge pride in doing that, is going to be really, really difficult. We know the system has in the past been, what's the word I'm looking for here? Some people have taken advantage of it. Look, Ryan Giggs.
Abused.
Yeah, Ryan Giggs, yeah. Who never played a friendly for Wales in his life, practically. He always had a hamstring injury, which kept him away from those kind of international duties. Alex Ferguson was quite brilliant at doing that and managing those situations for his players. A guy who didn't play during the international break was all of a sudden fit for the weekend. I think that, you know, not that that sparked that, but I think that might have been part of why that system is in place, where a player has to report for international duties to be assessed by the national team's medical people. So,
yeah,
it's in an ideal world, yes, you should be able to say, look, you there, you're gonna tweak your groin, you're gonna miss some games for us, but in reality, there's not much you can do about it.
Do you think it's commonplace? This is a slightly separate issue for clubs to be insured against the risk of players getting injured at international level. Because do you remember there was a case where I think Newcastle, the FA had to pay out quite a lot of money because Michael Owen did his cruise ship, so had to pay like a couple of million quid or something like that.
Right.
I wonder if that's something that happens, you know, is that, I wonder if that happens in all cases with all players. Do clubs protect their assets in that way?
I don't know.
Fascinating to know.
Yeah, somebody who is a football insurance broker or an actuary could probably fill us in on that one.
Mm.
But I guess perhaps there's some protection plan in place in terms of wages, maybe. I don't think you could really look for compensation, but if you're paying a guy 100 grand a week and he's injured while playing for England, then
they're
you know, maybe there's some onus on the FAs, the national associations, to assume part of that payment, or their insurance can cover part of that payment. I don't really know how it works, though. But maybe somebody out there does and can tell us. And we can do Go on.
I said we have the ultimate insurance policy already in Alex Iwobi.
Yes.
Who, you know, is obviously waiting in the wings, as discussed.
All right.
Let's have another question, shall
we? Yeah.
Okay, this is from Patrick Wilson, at Patrick K. Wilson. And he asks, do you think the Theo Walcott that we saw in the match against Manchester United, i.e. the closing down and the tackling, will continue to turn up?
Good question. I would like for that to happen, obviously. And I think people can very easily separate performance from effort, if you know what I mean. Walcott, I thought, was fantastic against Manchester United, but there are going to be games where he doesn't play as well as that. Maybe his passing will be a little off, or his movement won't be quite right, or his end product won't be there. But if there's the same effort, like we see it with Alexis, as much as I love him, and I think we all love him, he's had some stinking games for us. Like, he's had some really poor games. But it doesn't raise the ire in the same way, because even when he does play badly, he tries hard. And when he is playing badly, he tries even harder to try and to get over that, to sort of play himself into the game a little bit. And I think people appreciate that. So on the one hand, you have the level of performance that Walcott showed against Manchester United, which was excellent and one of his best games for the club ever. And on the other, you have the effort and endeavour that he showed to track back and to do the tackling and to rob the ball from Schweinsteiger, etc., etc. That part, I would say, is the easiest part to get right week in, week out. You know, it is.
Although perhaps not for Theo, based on his career to date. You know?
Sure. I mean, that's why I would still be a little cautious overall about Walcott. I think he's done brilliantly, and he's, I said it last week, humble pie, etc., etc. But I think it's still quite early, and we need to see him do it, not just three games or six games or eight games. He's got to do it every game between now and May, the end of May, or whenever the season finishes. And then he's got to do it next season as well. Because if this is the way that he wants to play as a centre forward, or if this is the sort of performance that allows him to be picked week in, week out as a centre forward, that effort and being switched on defensively and doing the basics, that's the easy part. The more difficult part is being creative and scoring goals and you know, all that. That is the most difficult part. But just putting in the effort, I think should be the norm, the default setting for him. But, you know, again, part of what made that performance so, oh my goodness, was the fact that it's rare, or has been relatively rare for him, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I remain a little bit cautious. I hope so, because it would be great, because he's got all the attributes to really cause problems to the opposition if he does play like that. What do you reckon?
I don't know. I mean, I was going to say, do you think the nature of the opposition has something to do with the way he played? Like, do you think it was the fact that it was United, that it was this big game that inspired him to produce that? And if so, I guess that kind of applies to the whole team, doesn't it? I mean, they were superb. They attacked the game with real vim, for want of a better word, against United. And I suppose we find ourselves saying, well, why don't they do that in every match? And I guess there is something about certain occasions that brings that out of players, you know, and I think finding the motivation to be able to do that every single match, which is something Alexis can do, is something that I think a lot of our squad could benefit from.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree, and I think there was an element of them wanting to respond to what happened against Olympiacos. There was also the fact that it was against Manchester United, so you know you've got to raise your game, but, you know, that really should be the default in terms of the way the team operates, or at least tries. And look, I think we sometimes forget that they don't ever go out to deliberately play badly. I think when they go out onto the pitch, all the things have been said on the training ground, all the preparation's gone into it, and, you know, this is what you should do, this is what we need you to do. But football is weird, and the vagaries of the game mean that sometimes you just don't play particularly well. So it's not like they go out and play badly. I think they go out and try to play well in every single game. But, you know, I think there are things that are in your own hands, and those things aren't necessarily performance-based, but effort-based more than anything else. And that comes across perhaps a little bit like run around a bit like Harry Redknapp, but it's to do with concentration and discipline and what you do without the ball as much as what you do with the ball. That makes sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely it does, yeah.
Right.
Well, look, I think that Walcott, just to finish on that, I think that what he showed against United was a really complete striker's performance, and that's what's been absent from him for a long time. He's always had elements of that attacking play that have been right, but he's never put it all together as one.
Sure.
And that's simply what he needs to do more regularly against all class of opposition.
All right. Is it my turn?
It is now, yeah. You have permission.
Okay, this one comes from Walter Peck at the _J_High. Walter Peck was the guy from Ghostbusters.
Ah.
That's who he
was.
Well,
here he is.
This
is what became of him.
Well, it's great to know. It's great to know that he's an Arsenal fan. Walter, really admire your work. You got it wrong. You got it wrong in the movie by making them shut down the system. And all the ghosts escaped. Then the big marshmallow man came. But I hope you've learned your lesson.
I hope you're sorry, mate. Is that what his question's about, or...?
No, it's actually about Liam Brady. He wants to know, should we welcome the return of Liam Brady to an active role at the club, or is this a step backwards? This is in relation to reports last week in the Mirror from John Cross that Liam Brady was going to be brought back into the youth setup to oversee player loans and making sure that the best talent remains at the club, and perhaps making sure that the best talent develops properly via the loan system, etc., etc.
Very interesting, isn't it? Very interesting.
Yeah.
Just so soon after his... it was retirement, wasn't it? He retired?
Yeah, he sort of was in an ambassadorial role.
Right, that's it. And is it Andrus Jonker who came in to replace him? Fascinating to see him come back so soon. I mean, my interpretation would be, if he is particularly looking at the loan market and getting players' first-team experience elsewhere, is it simply the case that he has an established and broad network of contacts within Britain that enable him to do that, that maybe Jonker can't emulate, what with having come over from Holland? However, I mean, you could appoint a lot of people who could do the job. The fact they've gone back, Brady, is what's particularly interesting. I don't know how hands-on he's going to be, but I mean, it does feel a little bit like maybe things aren't going quite as they hoped with the youth system, if you're having to revert back to bring in someone who was there previously, no?
Maybe. I mean, it might well be a case that Jonker's come in and he's been quite upfront and he's done a lot of things behind the scenes. They've had new pitches installed. He's talked about restructuring the scouting system. You know, he's brought in a lot of young talent from Europe. I think there were four or five, maybe six young players signed from across Europe last summer. So maybe that's an admission that the quality of the player that the academy is producing isn't quite right. There's no quick fix for that. You know, you've got to go back and you've got to restructure from the ground up, basically, and try and improve your system. So the fruits of that or what he's doing might be not seen for quite a long time. The other side of that, then, if he's totally focused on that, perhaps there's a need or they've identified a need for somebody in this position, you know, that Jonker himself has said, look, I've got this on my plate. I've got to do all this, but we need somebody to manage this. So you're talking about players like Dan Crowley and Chuba Akpom, Isaac Hayden, etc., etc. These guys are at a point where they need to develop as players, and we need somebody to manage that development, even if it is outside of Arsenal. So making sure that they go on loan to the right club, for example, a club that perhaps matches the philosophy of Arsenal in terms of the football that they play, or where they're going to get a good chance to play regular first team football. And so far, so good for Hayden and Akpom at Hull City. It seems to be going pretty well for them there. So it might well just be a case that it's not that stuff has gone wrong, but they need to get more stuff right via an appointment. And if there's somebody who knows Arsenal and who's got an interest in the job, maybe Liam Brady put himself forward for a position, saying, look, I'm kind of bored of this whole retirement thing. I could do it being more active. And if he's happy enough to work alongside Jonker and to do that job, then fine. But I guess we'll find out in due course whether it's a forward or retrograde step. But I like to think it's probably something that's done to help improve things at youth level.
Yeah, and I think, to be honest, it probably would have been healthy for there to be a kind of passing of the torch, as it were, a period where Brady and Jonker worked alongside each other, and they will get that now, albeit in a slightly roundabout fashion. So I think it's probably positive. I think it's probably always a positive thing to have someone like Liam Brady around the club. I don't think anyone's sorry to see him back involved. But it is interesting, and I suspect that, as you kind of alluded to there, I suspect the primary thing will be that knowledge of where players go on loan. You know, Jonker's come from principally a background in Holland and Germany, and maybe doesn't have the extensive knowledge of, you know, the English lower divisions, Championship downwards, which is required if you're going to marry up a player with a club. And Brady, you know, obviously will have that.
Fair point. All right, another question.
All right, this is an interesting one. This is from Fred Turbin, who's at RLF86 on Twitter. And he says, with all the money being spent by mid-table teams, do you think a new team can win the Premier League anytime soon? So I assume he means one who has not won it previously.
No. No.
Me neither. I think no chance at all.
No. Unfortunately not. So there you go.
And there you go. Problem solved.
No, I mean, I think the clubs that have the potential to win it are so entrenched. There's still such a gap. I mean, I think there has been an equalisation to a certain extent. You know, look at Crystal Palace bringing in a player like Kabay from PSG, you know, a player that we were very interested in just before he went to PSG. So I think in terms of the overall talent of teams and squads, I think that's going to improve. I think it might make the games in general more competitive. There might be an equalization of talent and results. But I think we kind of forget that it's always been a difficult league to get results in, the Premier League.
Very much
I remember when we were doing the Invincibles book, myself and Andrew Allen, and we were doing the various reports on the matches, and you're looking at Arsenal, for example, drawing 1-1 with Leicester away from home. And you look at some of the players in the Leicester team, there was Frank Sinclair and Paul Dickov up front. And, you know, on paper, you're looking at a Leicester team, which individually and collectively is far inferior to an Arsenal team that had Bergkamp, Vieira, Henri, Pires, Ljungberg, Gilberto, all these players, Sol Campbell, all these players that we look back on as absolute giants. But, you know, if Arsenal won the game by a single goal, that's the way it went most of the time. You know, we didn't blast teams out of it all the time. You know, think about the game against Middlesbrough, 4-0, amazing, fantastic performance. But that was not so much the exception, but it certainly wasn't the norm. So it's always been a very difficult league to get results in. I think that's going to be even more the case, but I don't think there's any way financially or from a football point of view that anybody who hasn't won the Premier League before could win it now. So you're looking at Manchester United, Manchester City, Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool, depending on what happens with Klopp. And I think that's about it. Tottenham, no. Who else?
No. Liverpool haven't won the Premier League, I suppose. So they're the only one. But,
true. But you know what I mean? Just in terms of first division clubs. The only way I think it could happen is if we had another Manchester City situation at a different club, you know? So if a billionaire came in and was going crazy over some other club and pumped all the money in and they were able to do a PSG on it to a certain extent, then perhaps, you know, because you wouldn't have said, I don't know, 10 years ago that Manchester City would be a team that could win the Premier League, or 15 years ago, whatever it was. But, you know, obviously the financial circumstances change. So it needs for a new club to have a brand new set of financial circumstances for them to be able to win the Premier League.
Do you think financial fair play is flimsy enough to allow that to happen?
It's fucked. It doesn't exist for it. You know?
No. It's been completely unable to enforce any of its ideas, essentially. So I think it is fairly redundant. Mm.
You might need to move your mobile phone. I think your mobile
really?
Phone.
Oh, someone just rang me.
That's what it was.
Unknown number. Who was it? We'll never know.
Unless they call back.
Nah, they won't call back. They never do.
No,
they never do, Andrew, in my experience.
No, that's really weird. I got a call the other day from an American number. I didn't recognize the number, and I thought to myself, I missed the call. I don't know why. I think my phone was on silent. I was doing some recording or something. I missed the call. There's a missed call from the United States number. I was, look, if somebody's calling me from the United States of America, they'll try again. They didn't leave a message. They'll just try again.
Important.
Yeah.
Someone must be important. Tried to assassinate the president or something. Yeah.
Jesus, you'll get this podcast in trouble, man. But yeah, and they never did. And then I'd forgotten all about it. And now I remembered, and my curiosity has piqued, and I really want to know who it was.
It's the mystery.
Sometimes
you miss a call from a number and you get a number, but you don't recognise it. I'll sometimes send a text message saying, sorry, I don't have this number, who's calling, and they just won't reply to that.
My goodness, what's wrong with people?
That's just tormenting me.
It surely is.
Anyway, I think it's your turn to have a question.
I don't think it is. Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I think it is my turn, because you asked the last one, didn't you, about Premier League?
That's how this works.
Okay. Right, here... Here is the question. This comes from @bin16. And he deleted his first question because his first question was, does growing a bear help strikers end their goal draft? I think he means drought. Growing a bear. He actually means, does growing a beard help strikers end their goal drought? Because Olivier Giroud now looks like he's cultivating a bit of a beard. Scored 2 against Denmark. Bit of help from Kasper Schmeichel, but would growing a beard or a bear, it's up to you, either or, does that help strikers, in your opinion? And actually, this is Anna, who's a Mertesacker, but with a 4 instead of an A. She wanted to know, was his new beard the magical ingredient to his brace last night?
Well, it's interesting. Theo Walcott's developed a beard, hasn't he, to go along with his striking aptitude. There's a correlation there. This runs deep, I suspect. Does growing a beard, I don't know, what would the possible advantage be of having a beard? It might mean that when defenders might be a bit reticent to challenge you in the air because they wouldn't want to get grazed when they nuzzled against you in a you know, fighting over an aerial ball.
Yeah. I mean, you could fill your beard full of nits and just kind of thrust your chin out towards defenders and they'd run away from you because they wouldn't
That's
want
true.
The nits.
You could keep unpleasant things in the beard, like Mr. Twit or something from Roald Dahl. What else could you do? I don't know.
Does it improve a player's aerodynamic ability?
You'd think it would slow them, no?
Yeah.
The wind whistling through your beard.
Because isn't that what cyclists and swimmers, not a bit of body hair on them anywhere because they need to be more aerodynamic in the water. They're like strange hairless creatures, cyclists and swimmers.
I had all the hair. I mean, I'm not a very hirsute man. I bet you're wondering how this story's going to end.
I am.
But I had all the hair removed from my face with a knife recently. You know, like a proper wet shave. Have you ever had that?
No, I haven't because I'm terrified of the guy just, like, losing his mind and slitting my throat.
Yeah. It was at a place... Well, is it a place called Jack the Clipper, which is nerve-wracking anyway. Makes you sound like I'm going to die in here.
Jack the Clipper, the demon guy, barber.
Exactly. It was exactly like that. And basically, the guy sat me down and he was like, he was a Turkish bloke, and he said, I can do this in 45 seconds. And he had a blade in his hand. And I was like, take your time, mate. Do you know what I mean? This is not something that you necessarily want to rush. So he did it in a couple of minutes, but it's genuinely exhilarating and quite frightening. I don't know. I don't recommend it.
Yeah, I don't like being clean shaven anyway.
Well, I don't, but it was the experience, you know. I was sort of, I looked about 10 years younger, which at my age is not necessarily a good thing. In about 10 years' time, I'll be very grateful for that. But right now, I don't really care about looking younger. I sort of don't really mind. It was scary. It was a scary, scary time. But, you know, it was sort of lovely and scary simultaneously. A bit like a bear.
A bit like growing a bear.
Yeah, I brought it back round.
Yeah, nicely done.
Growing a bear could definitely help you out, I think, as a striker.
Imagine
if you could...
Just shoot bears from your chin.
Yeah.
You're running through on goal, like, and all of a sudden, and there's a fucking grizzly bear. Screw you, whoever defender it is. Who would
just
we
John
like?
Terry, isn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah. God, that would be amazing.
Find me a centre half willing to go head to head with a man with a bear on his face, and I'll find you a liar.
Who's the most terrifying bear in history? There was this film.
Not Yogi.
Not Yogi. He was just an asshole.
Poo.
No.
It's not. Yeah, it's not.
Paddington was quite sinister in his way, wasn't he?
I think after a few drinks, Paddington could get quite aggressive. Do you know what I mean? Like, and he was from deepest, darkest Peru. Like, I think the mean streets. Do you know what I mean? I think he probably learnt a thing or two out there.
Marmalade was code, wasn't it? Marmalade sandwich. That was like a piece of bread
I've
with
got
a
your
load
marmalade,
of.
Mate.
Yeah, a load of like hallucinogens or cocaine.
Narcotics.
Yeah, so Paddington's like swarming the streets of London late at night with his wellies going bananas. There was that film with Anthony Hopkins and Alec Baldwin in it. I can't remember what it was called. The Fear, perhaps. And they were trapped. They've gone to Alaska or something like that. And there's a great scene with the bear, and the bear kind of goes... But you know the way the bear's bottom lip comes out when they're giving out?
That's really
quite scary. He was a scary bear.
What about Bungle? Did you ever see Rainbow?
Yes. I would not like to be, you know, trapped in a dark room with Bungle. No.
Surely, like, Bungle is, he's going to be the next sort of 70s TV personality to be exposed, I imagine.
Yeah, that's exactly it. There's got to be somebody out there with some terrible dream sequence. And they went to a party, they took a couple of pills, they were sitting there, the music was in one room, and they said, oh, fuck, I'm going into a different room, I'm going to sit there, I'm going to have a joint and just sit there, and they're sort of closing their eyes and off their tits, and then all of a sudden they're sitting there, and they realise Bungle is sitting beside them. Where the hell did Bungle come from? How did he get there? What is he doing? Get your paws off me! That didn't happen
exactly
to me.
That. Exactly. Well, I'm glad. I'm glad because it would be quite the trauma had it done so.
It really would be. Okay.
So he's the scariest bear.
Do we have one more question?
Yeah, go on then. I'll give you one more.
All right.
This one is from Steve Moore, at Steve Moore, 4116. He asks, do you have any real concerns? That's not the end of the question, I must point out.
I do. I have lots of them in general.
Yeah. Do you have any real concerns that the Ox may not fulfil his massive potential at the Arsenal?
Potential as what, though? I mean, is, you know, he's a good video guy. I think that could be it.
That's true.
Every
we found the successor to Johan Juru, certainly.
Yeah, I have every faith that he could do that. So, no.
I think he means as a footballer, mainly.
What's the... Football? Is that why we're here, really? To talk about football?
I know. It's just a game, guys. Come on.
Yeah. You're all taking it far too seriously.
It doesn't matter. Let's just chill out.
Yeah.
No, go on. Ox, do you think he's going to be all right?
Yeah.
Good. He's a good lad, isn't he?
Seems a decent fella. You'd have a good pint with him. He wouldn't be the guy when you're sitting in a party that you're off your face and you're sitting on the couch, and then you wouldn't turn around and the Ox wouldn't be there. He wouldn't be doing things to your special area.
He'd
with
be
his
dancing.
Paws. Yeah.
No. He'd be up dancing with Jenks and Callum Chambers.
Yes.
And their little gang.
Yes. I think that would be exactly his role. So no, I have faith that he can do it.
That's good. He hasn't done much yet this season, has he, apart from make loads of defensive errors, but
he did score the winner against Chelsea in the Community Shield.
That's true.
Can we give him that?
We're eternally grateful. Yeah, I think so.
All right.
I think so. It's sort of on that sort of cusp between being a friendly and not. So we'll let him have it.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do is we'll leave it there, you know, to end on a positive note. That would be the main thing.
All right.
Yeah, that's good. We're going to have an Arsecast on Friday.
We did well.
Yeah. We did.
Yeah, on Friday, we look forward to Watford. I guess you will be, won't you?
I will. Looking forward to
it. I'm going to Watford.
Excellent.
It's the place of my birth, believe it or not.
You should support your local team, then.
I know. I was born in Watford General Hospital, which is literally a stone's throw. I have been there, picked up a stone and thrown it to prove that it's a stone's throw from Vicarage Road. But
well, look, you know, the handiness here is that if Arsenal win against Watford and some part of your body breaks, you won't have far to go to get mended.
Hey, I have been treated in there many times. So, yeah, let's see. It's conveniently placed location for me.
All right. Well,
so, yeah, all that to come later this week.
Excellent. Well, we'll talk to you from your hospital bed live on Monday for the Arsecast Extra. And until then, take it easy, folks.
Bye-bye. Do you want to play us out? Lovely.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.